Good afternoon and welcome to Lunch with Leaders. I'm your host, Cindy Morgan, the Vice President of Learning and Organizational Development, and I'm really happy that you're here. In the service of getting this conversation started, I want to turn it over to my colleague, Youngin Cho, the Executive Producer of Lunch with Leaders, to give you a couple of tips of how you can actively participate. Youngin, how are you doing this afternoon?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for joining Lunch with Leaders today. We have our two newest CEOs with us, and this is your opportunity to get to know them and ask questions. So please put your questions in the Q&A window. We'll try to get to as many as we can. Get your cell phones ready for the poll and use the chat to share your thoughts and experiences. We really love hearing from you and invite you to join in the conversation. We continue to provide the CME CE credit. The texting feature, once you have your profile set up, may be the easiest option. Now it's open for the next 24 hours. So text the event code 72641221539867728. The event handout is on the LeadStrong website. And for any questions, reach out to the CME office and sit back and enjoy the show.
Thanks, Youngin. Thanks for all that you do to ensure the success of the show. So welcome, everyone. I'm really happy that you're here. For those who have tuned in before, welcome back. For anyone new joining us today, welcome. Lunch with Leaders is a place where we can all come together in community with fellow Penn Medicine leaders to hear from leaders, to share and exchange ideas and be innovative and to continually grow our own leadership skills. So I want to call on each of you. This show is going to be fantastic. So tell your friends, pass along the link. You can even go to the LeadStrong webpage and pull other shows that maybe you missed, and you can listen to them on your own or even with your teams. They can be downloaded as a podcast, or you can listen and watch the show in its entirety. That's on the LeadStrong website. Gretchen has posted it in the chat. Hi, G. Thanks so much for being here today. Okay, so let's talk about last episode. We got a lot of great feedback. Dr. Wender, Dr. Miller, they really loved Catherine Morrison, as did the rest of the participants. So this is one of those shows that if you missed it, you definitely don't want to miss it fully. Go back on chat. I don't know about each of you, but I was thinking about apples all week following Catherine Morrison's show. Your feedback, by the way, Youngin put it together in a survey format. We forwarded all the emails that we got because people really were digging Catherine. And it moved her so much that she decided that she would bless us with a second guest appearance coming out of retirement yet again. So stay tuned. We're going to have Catherine Morrison back. Not sure when, because we've got some great shows planned and we'll talk about that later. But just know she really loved doing this. She also had to compliment Gretchen and Casey and Youngin from the PMA team for how extraordinarily well-organized and how awesome this show is run on the back end of things. So thanks to Generator, Youngin, G, Casey, Dream Team. All right, we got three big commercials this week. Number one, today kicks off 2021 Penn Medicine Nursing Week. Whoop, whoop. I need to give a huge shout out to all of our nurses across all of our entities, across every ambulatory practice. Special thank you to our CNOs at each entity. We see you. We value you. We couldn't do this without our nursing partners who help lead in all areas of our business. So I want to say personally, thank you. Thank you so much for creating such a great environment and a great experience for each of our patients, their family members. I love it when I'm a patient because our nursing team is just outstanding. And when my parents come here, I really appreciate it even more. So I want to give a huge shout out. Make sure that each of you are taking time this week to thank a nurse, thank your nursing leaders. They really deserve it. So, and I know it means so much. So again, thank you. I'm wishing everyone a fantastic Penn Medicine Nursing Week. They're just heroes. So thank you. All right. Number two, did you catch the Penn Medicine ACHE info session? If you haven't, we have the recording. This may be a program for you or someone that reports to you. It's a great leadership opportunity in partnership with the ACHE to earn your fellowship and be in a cohort and learn together with fellow Penn Medicine leaders. So if you are interested, you should go to the website. All your questions can be answered. The info session is awesome. And one of our guests today on Lunch with Leaders starred in that too. So I think you'll really appreciate what we're putting together. It may not be for you at this time, but you could add it to your development plan for next year or even the year after, because I think we're going to do this for a while. So really excited about that. Finally, big one. This is your opportunity to learn from one of the nation's celebrity organizational psychologists and Wharton's highest rated professor 7 years in a row. That's right, everyone. Kevin Mahoney secured us Adam Grant for the book club. This is like so awesome. We got a celebrity coming to talk to us about our workplace. Gonna be awesome. Consider this quote, yet in a turbulent world, there's another set of cognitive skills that might matter more. The ability to rethink and unlearn. So I know I'm really pumped about this. So Adam Grant will join us at the next Penn Medicine Book Club June 30th. Kevin will facilitate. The book is Think Again. Register on the website. Once you register, you'll be sent another email that will be able to get you the free book. Read that book. The chat will be on fire. I really think this is going to be a great session. So thank you. Commercial's over. Let's talk about today because it's going to be a great show. So today we are very excited and honored to have two of our newest CEOs, James Dimitriadis and John Herman, and they represent Princeton Medical Center and Lancaster General. We are going to hear all about them, their careers, get to know them a little bit. They're fantastic. So I think you're really going to come away with a sense of who these leaders are, how they wound up in these roles, and really some of the ways that they think about taking up their leadership stance. So I'm looking forward to having James and John with us today. But first, I really need to check in with you. So pull out your phones. You're going to have a quick poll. So using your cell phones, you're going to text Penn Medicine 918 to 22333. You'll be in the survey. I'd like to know, what emotions are you feeling today? And in the meantime, I am very honored to introduce, and I won't botch their names this time, James Dimitriadis, the CEO of Penn Medicine Princeton Health, and John Herman, CEO of Lancaster General Health. James, John, I'm so happy that you're here. You can come on camera with me, and we're like in this. So, hi, welcome.
Hi, Cindy. How are you doing, everyone?
Hi, John. Hi, James.
Cindy, how are you?
I'm thrilled that you're here, and congratulations to both of you on your new role.
Thanks.
All right, let's see how people are feeling. All right, we got optimistic, tired, fantastic. Ooh, we haven't seen fantastic in quite some time, maybe if ever. Busy, I feel that. Optimistic, coming in strong. Or while we're waiting for some words to come in, John, James, you think you'll go to the book club with Adam Grant? Are you Adam Grant fans like I am?
I'm in.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Take advantage of any learning opportunity we have here.
Yeah, me too. All right, so let's see. Tired, overwhelmed, anxious, pumped, relieved, grateful, empowered. Wow, I'm loving this group today. They are filling us with energy and hope. And we kind of are starting to feel like life's getting a little bit back to normal, especially with those tired and busy feelings. I'm feeling a little bit like that myself. So thank you so much for sharing your emotions. We are tracking, and at some point in the upcoming show, I'll share with you sort of what our trends have been. So thanks, Casey, for running that poll, and thanks, everyone. Do those words surprise you, James?
No. I mean, I think tired has been the theme of the past 14 months, and I'm optimistic to see that excitement and optimism is kind of coming back into frame. So that seems like a great trend.
Yeah, thanks. All right, John, I want to start our discussion today with a little bit of bragging about you. You've come to Penn Medicine after a successful run as the CEO of the North Shore region of the Ochsner Health System. You were there in rows in your career since 2014. Before Ochsner, you were up in Buffalo with the Catholic Health System for 18 years. Your final role there was the CEO of Mercy Hospital. So I need to ask you the most important question. John, What restaurant are you going to miss the most from New Orleans?
Pesh.
Why do you like it?
They have the best oyster bar and gin martinis in all of New Orleans. We used to
John
go there.
John Herman, I think we're going to be friends. That
we used
sounds
to go
like
there
my
on
kind
Friday
of
nights and get a couple dozen oysters and just sit there and we'd have a New Orleans time.
That sounds amazing.
You didn't ask me the question I thought you were going to ask me is, how am I feeling today?
How are you feeling today?
I'm a little disappointed by that. I'm actually really excited because you know what? I'm going to be at Pesh tonight.
That's amazing. You're going back, huh?
Yep. So my daughter's graduating from LSU, and we're going to have the opportunity to go down there. So really excited to go celebrate with her. Such a great accomplishment in her life. So I'm on cloud nine right now.
That's amazing. Well, we're really lucky to have you at Penn Medicine. I knew that John was going to be great. One of our newest hires who joined the Penn Medicine Academy team is named Kylie Todaro. She worked in your health system and at Ochsner. We're lucky to have her at Penn Medicine. And she told us, we're really lucky to have you here. And she was under your leadership and said that we're really just fortunate to have you. So John, let me ask you, how did you know it was time for a change? And what sold you on this opportunity?
Change is hard.
I know.
And when you think about a sale, you know, I think we would hope that, you know, making a decision like this could be like a business case. You know, you go through the data and you run the numbers and you get to a conclusion, but it can't be. You know, there's that emotional side of, okay, is this the right decision or not? And so, you know, I think that's what I would say the process that I went through was a little bit of data. A lot of data, but a whole lot of sort of emotional and soul searching. And is this the right next thing for me? And it really came down to, I would say, four things, you know, sort of data, you know, the legacy of Penn Medicine, the legacy of LGH in terms of the quality, the types of organization that they are, you know, that hit a really high number. You know, both organizations are really mission driven. And for me, that's important. I think for a lot of us, it's important that we feel like we're working for an organization that's got a purpose, that they're striving for their purpose. As I listened and I went through the search process, it felt like some of the experiences that I had could help. And I like to help. There was an opportunity. But the one thing that really sold it were all the conversations that I had and the feeling that I got from the people that I spoke to. It just felt right. And so I took the leap and I'm here. But it's that balance between, you know, you're going to have some data, but at the end of the day, you've got to make that emotional decision.
Thanks, John. Really well said. I think sometimes as leaders, we are so intent on interviewing the person that I think you bring up a good reminder to say that we also need to be selling our candidates so they want to have that emotional connection, that they feel like they want to overcome some of the resistance to change and they feel excited about joining us and they are interviewing us as much as we're interviewing them, and it has to be that mutuality. So I think that that's a great point in terms of your experience. Thank you for sharing that. So, all right, level with me. What surprised you about coming here the most so far? What's different than you expected?
I wouldn't, unfortunately, you know, and I think this is a credit to the search process. There's not a lot that has really surprised me. I would say it more affirmed, you know, some of the feelings that I had. I would say two of the strongest feelings that I have are first, there's a true love. I'll use the word love in Lancaster for the community and from the community. I mean, I can't go a half a day and I don't hear about somebody on our team that is really inspired or engaged about something that they're able to do for the community. In the same way, when I'm out with the community, I don't go a half a day for where I hear from a community member just how much they appreciate and they love you know, the organization back. And I think, man, that's a fun place to be, you know, where everyone is just in that space. And with Penn Medicine, you know, I think recognizing that you know, it's an academic organization that really tries to do brand new things, and seeing that over and over and over again, and the things that we're doing, you know, things like this is awesome. It provides a great way of us to connect in spite of COVID, I think that innovative nature of Penn has really been just affirming that this is a great decision.
I'm so glad. Brandy Jenkins says that's Lancaster through and through. Yeah. I think many people probably could respond to that. Does that make you feel pressure knowing that that love is so there? Do you feel like you've got to live up and into that role, knowing that there is such a brand connection there in the community?
I can't say that it's pressure. I mean, that's how I try to work with the team, and you work with your organizations that you're in. I think, that's what makes life fun. Is when you're around people and other organizations that you get energized around the same thing. So I wouldn't call it pressure. I mean, it's just part of what we do, and I guess it's part of what I try to do. And so that's what has just been. It's made it comfortable.
Thank you, John. Let me jump over to you, James. James, let me brag about you for a minute. You worked at Princeton Health for 17 years before coming into the CEO role. You were the SVP and COO. You helped to build the strategic plan, or the five-year strategic plan for Princeton Health. And some of that incorporated coming to Penn Medicine and having Princeton Health join the Penn Medicine system, which is pretty amazing. And before you even worked at Princeton for 17 years, you were like a kid and you were working in hospitals at Reading Hospital and at the Health South Corporation. So here's my question that I'm dying to know, and I've always wanted to ask you. So when Barry announced his retirement, did you like automatically know, like your resume was ready and you were applying? Or at what point did you know you aspired to be the CEO at Princeton?
Well, I won't say that my resume was ready, but I will say that it's a resounding yes that I knew I wanted to go for the position. You know, I've been around the organization for 17 years. This organization has been so rewarding to me in terms of giving me additional areas of responsibility as I've become ready to do that. I started in hospital administration at a kind of a young age. You know, I came out of high school really interested in hospital administration, which not a whole lot of people do. But it's been, this place is a great organization. Like Lancaster, it's the people that make this organization what it is. So yeah, I felt that I was ready.
So it's sometimes tricky to interview internally. So yeah. What was it like for you? Were there emotions that went along with putting yourself out there, knowing that there could be a chance of perhaps not being in the seat, being interviewed on Lunch with Leaders as the new CEO spotlight? What was that like for you?
Yeah, yeah. So I think the most interesting part of it was that the interview process was 100% virtual for all of the candidates, including me that, comes to work here every single day. 18 months ago, I could have never dreamt about going through a CEO search all via Teams and Zoom. But it was really pretty comfortable. I think anytime you put yourself out there, there's a level of vulnerability. I certainly felt it. I think what was unique about being an internal candidate, a couple of things. Number one, I think from the minute you declare yourself a candidate, I felt it was my kind of my own perception that you have to be on every meeting, every presentation, every interaction. I think you're being viewed through kind of a new and different lens. The other piece I would say is that being an internal candidate, each interviewer has a keen awareness of the organization. They have a keen awareness of how I've performed in the organization, good or otherwise. So I think, as such, the questions were very thorough. They were insightful. They were thoughtful. And they really pushed me as an internal candidate to kind of dig deeper during the interview process and really be thoughtful in my responses and where I see the organization heading.
Thanks for your candor and your transparency in that. I mean, so often we as leaders are dying to ask, you know, what did that feel like? So thank you for honoring that question. So like, congrats, you're in the big show. You've aspired to this for so long and like you made it here. So what's it like? Is it what you thought it was gonna be like? Are there like a lot of things you have to learn? Are you drinking from the fire hose? And how do you like stay grounded for all of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's, well, from my perspective, it's going extremely well. It certainly was helpful, and I feel very fortunate to have had some time with our outgoing CEO to do that transition planning. But I would say, you know, for those that are tuned in today, taking the next step in their career, like me, in terms of your transition, I think it's really important to have a keen understanding of where your growth areas are. And for me, personally, my growth areas really revolve around governance and how I manage our board of trustees, fundraising and engaging with our foundation to really advance our mission. And these are just, you know, in my previous role as Senior Vice President and COO, it was not my focus. So I have found that really putting a plan together to help address those areas for growth is really a highly effective way to do that. The other piece for me in terms of transitioning, I've spent a great deal of time listening and meeting with staff from around the organization, both from an employee perspective, our medical staff, through town halls and other venues. I think I've been fortunate enough to be in front of about a third of our staff, but I think really listening to the organization and making that a priority is key from a transition perspective.
Thank you. I'd love to hear from the audience in terms of anyone else who's transitioned into their new roles, and how did you discern what your developmental opportunities were or things that you're working on? I think James expressed his so well. John, James, both of you have team members shouting you out. People feel really lucky that you are at the helm. So I want to say thank you for that. So because it's Nurses Week, I've got to start Nursing Week question. What would you want to say, John, to recognize all the nursing leaders at LG, at Penn Medicine? Big shout outs. What do these nursing leaders and nurses mean to you and your business?
I think they're all our heroes. I mean, what our leaders have had to go through, you know, and James, you probably can relate to this with your experience in the military. I mean, it's just been absolutely heroic. I mean, at the cutting edge of, you know, of crisis, both in their own lives, of other family members' lives, and just having to persevere through that day after day after day. Now, I don't think we can thank them enough for all the service that they've done, for all that they've done to help our patients, to help our families, to help us. I mean, I think through this crisis, I know a lot of times I would get down, and you know, it was my chief nurse that would sort of help me think and get through it, and so. You know, we just can't thank them enough for what they have done every single day. And I know there's a great big team around them, but at the end of the day, every day they're right there at the bedside, they're in the clinic with that patient, and you know, they're the ones that are the face of the organization. So thank you for all you've done. Thank you for how you have supported us and reflected on us.
Thanks. Same question, James.
Yeah, I have to kind of echo what John said. A few weeks ago, I listened to an NPR piece. They did a phenomenal kind of retrospective on the last 12 to 14 months. It was actually on the anniversary of when the WHO deemed COVID-19 a pandemic. And, you know, they focused on our frontline caregivers. And since that piece, I have been thinking really just nonstop about the sacrifices that everybody made. You know, we were at, and without hesitation, I may add, we were at Princeton, we were at the tip of the spear, just behind New York. They jumped into the fight when we had limited treatment modalities. We were extremely short on PPE. We had limited protocols. suboptimal space. You know, we were caring for people in our PACU as an extension of our ICU. And, you know, our folks served valiantly. They jumped in with little regard for their safety to respond to the needs of the community that we've served now for 102 years and continue to serve. So like John said, and to echo what our chief nursing officer here has been saying, 2020 was the year of the nurse. 2021 continues to be the year of the nurse. I am, you know, really inspired by the work that they do every day. And I think, you know, Nursing Week's a great time to say thank you, but I think we need to do it more often.
Thanks. Sheila weighed in to say you're very pro-nursing. So thank you both for your comments about the importance of our nursing population and celebrating Nurses Week with us here as a kickoff. I've got to go back. I've got to shout out Maggie McIntosh, who had a really great comment about playing off of some of your transition planning. She said, my transition plan was to think big, but to go slow, aim for change, but not capsize the boat. Maggie, big shout out to you. I think that's really very astute comment. So, John, let me go to you. Strategic priorities for LG for the year ahead as you're onboarding. What do you think the organization's great strengths are? Where are there opportunities for LG to get even better?
Yeah, so you know, I think as an organization, you know, COVID has consumed us for the last 15 months or so. And so I think that needs to be a big priority for all of us. You know, we are such an important part of providing overall care to our patients, and we need to make sure that we bring that back into balance. You know, we're very fortunate here. I think we have a couple different strengths that really help us to do that. I mean, first, just what an exceptional leadership team, from the executive team to the middle management team to our frontline employees, who in and of themselves are really strong leaders. And I would say giving them the opportunity to have a voice that allows us to see our future, to visualize our future. I think the second thing that we have to our advantage is the comprehensiveness and the quality of our medical staff. I mean, there's almost nothing that we aren't able to do either here in Lancaster or within Penn Medicine overall. And so how do we use that to advance the work that we need to do? You know, if you think, as I think about just Lancaster in general, you know, more and more often patients don't want to have to wait. They don't want to have to go a long distance in order to receive their care. And we're fortunate, or I'm fortunate, we have a relatively comprehensive network of clinic access centers that we're going to be able to leverage. But I think our greatest strength is what I said about earlier, which is that close connection that we have with the community. I mean, that's what's going to allow us to achieve what I think are some of the really important things that we're going to have to do over the next couple of years. So in addition to COVID, I think doubling down on consumerism is something that we're absolutely going to need to do. You know, we know that Penn State is coming into our environment. We already have sort of a structural advantage from what I talked about. But I think we need to double down on how we treat patients as customers, how we provide them with great access, how we provide them with great service. And then I think the second thing that we need to do is continue to advance the clinical advantage that we have. You know, but through things like our proton therapy, through clinical trials, through CAR-T, you know, through advances in research, by bringing greater neurovascular capability, you know, we need to take those really special things that we can do because of our relationship with Penn Medicine and the local excellent medical staff and teams that we have. And we just need to raise the bar even further. So, you know, addressing COVID or getting past COVID, providing normal care, dealing with, you know, doubling down on consumerism, then really advancing the advantage that we have are the three things that we're going to focus on.
Thanks, John. I appreciate that. James, Princeton is such a different micro market than LG. Are some of the trends and strategies that John's talking about, will they have the same impact for Princeton? Or what are you thinking in terms of the year ahead? Where are the strengths? Where are the opportunities? What are your priorities?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's certainly a lot of consistency between what John identified. I think, you know, for Princeton specifically, we've really spent the last 15 years investing in the new hospital and the build out of our health campus here in Central New Jersey, which once complete, will represent about a $1.5 billion health asset for the residents of Central New Jersey. And it cares for people across their life cycle, from CHOP specialty care through the living and memory care facility that is about to be completed this summer. I think, though, in terms of the future, the next, let's call it 3 years, 3 to 5 years, our four strategic imperatives really revolve around quality, growth and access, experience, and our people, which is our number one asset. One of our learnings from certainly from the pandemic is that we need to really diversify who and what we are here at Princeton, and we have some limitations in New Jersey. We are a certificate of need state, but we need to raise the level of acuity of the patients we treat and the intensity of services that we provide. We have to expand our geographic footprint, much like John mentioned, in terms of meeting patients where they are within the community. So moving away from a campus-centric model, diversifying our geographic footprint into several key markets within Central New Jersey, key service line development will be huge for us. We are investing heavily in cancer over the next several years and the development of a robust cancer center. Elective angioplasty will be a game changer. That has been recently deregulated in the state of New Jersey. So this is our opportunity to really become a cardiac hospital for the residents of Central New Jersey that either need to go to New Brunswick right now or essentially leave the market, working very closely with Dan Yosher. But I agree with John also around innovation. We will see on the heels of COVID a number of market disruptors and, you know, non-traditional care providers like in-home urgent care. So the degree to which we innovate, I think, will have a major bearing on our future success. The other two pieces that I want to mention, around quality, we absolutely have to be the undisputed leader of quality in our region. Our patients demand it as we move more and more into value-based payment models. Our payers expect it, whether it's Medicare or the commercial insurances, and it's synonymous with the brand in which we've aligned. So those two factors, I think, are really key. And then continuing to hone our experience, which is a mainstay of Princeton, and investing in our people is key to our continued success.
So big platforms for both of you and your teams. And knowing that as a leader, even as the CEO, you can't do all of this without having a really strong team. You both have such different backgrounds in a way where, John, you're coming in from the outside, inheriting a team and building a team. And James, you're moving from peer to direct boss and building a team. John, let me start with you. What are you doing to build your team?
Yeah, so, you know, I think it's really important that a team know each other in order to truly be a team. You know, one of my favorite things to do is to roll crew in an eight-man or eight-person, I guess, boat. And the thing about that boat is you need to know how each person, you need to know yourself, you need to know your own stroke, but you also need to know everyone else's stroke too. And so some of the things that we're doing is when I went through the search process, there was an assessment that was done that helped the search committee understand me. So we're actually going to review that with the entire executive team in the coming weeks so that I know myself now, but so that way they can start to understand me. And that sort of deep understanding of each other is important, I think, in terms of a healthcare organization, because it's a complex system. As important it is as a crew boat, because a crew boat is a complex system too. And so understanding each other deeply is an important part of that. So I'm going to share that with my team so that they can understand me. You know, one of the things that we do, you talk about feelings at the beginning of this, how you feel. And at the beginning of our meetings, we go around and that's the question that we answer. How am I feeling? And we try not to talk about sort of work stuff. We talk about, you know, personal stuff. So I'm going to see my daughter at LSU would be an example of that, because that's who we really are. I mean, we work, But what we really are is people that have families and you know, people that we care about, and that's what really I think gets us energized. You know, so I think spending time with each other, whether it's in meeting room or whether it's going to dinner and getting to know each other, I think that's what really allows us to come together and start to create a shared understanding of and really leverage each other's strengths and filling gaps where we may have weaknesses, so that ultimately we're able to deliver on some of these strategic initiatives that we talked about.
Thanks, John. People like the crew metaphor very much in the chat. James, what's it like going from peer to boss, and how do you build a team when you have those dynamics? What are you learning? What are your strategies? Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, so having spent 17 years here, I know the team extremely well. So I think moving from peer to boss, to John's point, having relationships in place, it has not been as difficult as I anticipated. But we have a number of key positions to onboard over the next several months. So we have my former position as COO that we are recruiting for. Our chief medical officer left at the tail end. He retired at the tail end of 2020. We have some department chair positions that are open. So we are going to be working extremely hard here, Princeton, to fill a number of key vacancies. And I think, you know, just a personal philosophy of mine is to hire for, you know, first EQ, emotional intelligence, and second for IQ, both very, very important. But I think a strong team player that contributes through her or his strengths to the collective good of the organization is what's just absolutely key. And cultural fit, and when I say cultural fit, I'm meaning someone that embraces the mission, vision, values of Princeton will ultimately dictate the leader's effectiveness in the organization. And you couple that with a clear roadmap and really just leveraging the strengths of the existing team, listening to their input and using their diversity of thought, I think will be key as we coalesce this team here at Princeton.
Thank you. Your mission, vision, values always really near and dear to my heart. I love that PMA helped you build
that. Right.
And I really feel so proud of what the organization came up with. So James and John have agreed to answer any questions that you may have for them. So please activate the chat. We'd love to hear any questions that you have for John and James. And of course, you know, I always have a ton of questions. So if you don't have any questions, I'm just going to keep going. We did get one submitted in the mail for you, James, and many people may know that Princeton has been on a Baldrige journey, and you submitted your application in 2018, and you received an Excellence Award recognition from the Mid-Atlantic Alliance for Performance Excellence, MAPE. How have you leveraged that information and that feedback to help you in your leadership role?
Yeah, so, I mean, that was a very insightful process for us at Princeton. It gave us the opportunity to really kind of look within and take an inventory or a stock in what we're doing and where we're going as an organization. But we used that feedback both in terms of crafting the four strategic imperatives that I mentioned, but also helping to hone our mission as an organization. The feedback was I think very beneficial for us. It gives you an outsider's perspective on how you're performing as an organization, and we're putting it to good use.
Great, thank you. Chris is asking a burning question of you, John. Have you had shoe fly pie yet?
I have not, but I generally don't eat sweets. Let me say it this way. I don't eat sweets, so that's why I haven't shoe fly pie, but my family has, and they loved it. But I'm just not a sweets person.
All right. Brandy wants to know, what's your favorite restaurant in Lancaster so far?
We went to the pantry for breakfast and it was really, really good. And I love a good breakfast. So far that's been, it's been hard to get out. There's a lot of restaurants that aren't open and they're open limited hours. So we haven't had the opportunity to test out as many, but I would say I really enjoy the pantry. I like those little off to the side, restaurants that you can get a good home cooked meal at.
All right, if you have recommendations for John Herman as he really gets to know his new area, please put them in the chat. He'll take anything and everything. James, best piece of advice you were given or you would give to others on becoming an even stronger leader and/or navigating leadership careers here at Penn or elsewhere?
Yeah. So I would say, where I've benefited coming into the new role is to, number one, lean on your new supervisor. I'm fortunate enough to report to Phil Ocala, and he's already helped me considerably to navigate some of the areas that I've identified as growth areas. So I mentioned that governance is a growth area for me. In the first few weeks in my role, Phil helped me to craft an approach to address a major project that had a lot of visibility with our board of trustees. And quite honestly, he helped me not shoot myself in the foot. So I feel real fortunate that he gave me that level of direction. The other thing I would say is, take advice that from those across the system that know the system best. Shortly after I became CEO, I received a call from Kevin, who talked to me about really how to manage successfully and lead successfully in the organization that we work in, which is very matrixed in nature, which has been also extremely helpful. So really, really listening to that advice. And again, I go back to really listening to the thoughts of your team, and using their diversity of thought as a way to break into the ranks.
James, thank you. Another question for you quickly. Baldrige journey, will you continue? Yes, no?
We're assessing Baldrige journey right now. The short answer is I'm not sure yet. We have significant opportunities in front of us. There is a great deal of work to do. The Baldrige structure, I think, is very helpful. But I think trying to make a Baldrige application every year to see how you're evolving is not necessarily the best use of time. I think you take the information, you take the feedback that you receive. You try to elevate the game, elevate your performance of the organization, and then after a couple of years of doing that, I think it's best to go back to either the regional consortiums for Baldrige or start looking at a national award.
Thanks. John, best piece of advice you were given or would give to others on becoming a stronger leader and navigating careers?
Yeah, I think James hit on something that was really, really critical, which is ask for help and be open to receiving help. I mean, that was one of the early learnings. I would say another thing, at least for me, that was really, really important. Relatively early on in my career, read the book by Clayton Christensen about how do you measure your life. And what a book basically talks about is, you can live your career to get to that next position or get the raise or whatever it is, or you can live your career to sort of a higher purpose, whatever your higher purpose would be. And everyone would choose sort of a different higher purpose. And that book said a lot to me. And so I've tried to live and approach my leadership in that way of having that purpose statement that I sort of focus on. It's given me perspective when I'm trying to make decisions, and it's also given me comfort. Because as long as I'm being true to myself, as I'm being true to that higher purpose, it seems to have guided me down a path that allows me to help myself or the organization to make really, really good decisions. So that would be something I would encourage everyone to do. And purpose doesn't happen by you sit down and you write it on a piece of paper and you put it in the desk drawer. it's something you got to live. You got to practice it every day. It's like any other capability that you have. You know, it develops over time and you don't always follow it, and you can't beat yourself up for that. You learn from the times that you weren't true to it. And then it maybe you evolve it, but you just keep working at it. And so those would be the two things that I would add to what James said.
Thanks. I appreciate both of your intentionality. Maggie wants to know, if there are aspiring C-suite leaders, what experiences do you think is critical to add to the resume? Is it managing large teams, running a service line, all of the above? Any thoughts on that? Let's start with you, James.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is continuing to go after stretch assignments, things that take you out of your comfort zone, areas that you can amass experience, both within your department and within your broader entity, and really amassing those accomplishments over time. The second piece of advice I would suggest is to, you know, learn to cross departments and to cross entities to solve and innovate. We are blessed here at Penn to have top-notch talent in this organization. And I think as you look to tackle different projects, different assignments, different initiatives, tap into those resources and harness the expertise that we have within the broader Penn Medicine community. I think we've done that. We've learned from all of the entities. We've learned from CPUP. We've learned from GSPP. And I think an individual's ability to do that will really help them move to the next step in their career.
Thanks. John, I can only imagine that you must be drinking from the fire hose, trying to assimilate you and your family to a new area, learning a new group of people, learning a new business, learning a new overarching organization that you're a part of. How do you manage your time and energy to juggle everything? What are your secrets for energy management so you can get it all done?
Yeah. So this is kind of counter to energy management, but I get up at about 4:15 every day, and my dog Max and I go for about a half an hour, 45 minute walk. And what I do is I reflect on yesterday, what went well, what didn't go well, but I think more about my today. You know, I know what's going to be important to me. You know, in roles like, you know, that James and I have, and all of us as individual leaders, I would suppose, you can't do everything. And I think what happens is, you know, when people get really burnt out, they're trying to do absolutely everything. And so trying to identify what are the really important things, where can I make a difference today, and doing it in really short intervals. Because if you try to say, I want to make a big change for a year from now, holy mackerel, am I really successful or not? But if you break it down into little pieces and you say, what can I do today? What can I do to make a difference today? It is what has allowed me to sort of take that great big world of opportunity that's out there, all this new information that's coming at me, sort of focus in on, okay, this is where I think I can make a real difference. And so my secret has been breaking it into really little parts.
Thanks. I also kind of like your meditative state to start your day. You dog outside sounds really idyllic. James, same question. How are you juggling all this? How are you drinking from the fire hose and still like managing to be James Dimitriadis' whole person in addition to new CEO?
Yeah, I am not getting up at 4:30 in the morning, and we do not have a dog. You know, my wife and I, we are lucky to have two young children. We have a 5 and 6 year old, and I could tell you that they keep you pretty grounded, and they can really help to take your mind off work. I use you know, like John, I think, described, once the girls go to bed every night, I spend, you know, probably about, you know, an hour and a half, just kind of quietly thinking about what we're working on, what needs to be done, what are the priorities for the coming days or weeks. That's kind of my meditative time to think about what's going well or where I need to adjust and just sit quietly and think, because, you know, there's not much time to do it at work. But I attribute definitely keeping sane to my family.
Thanks. So I want to just say thank you. You've been so generous with the questions and your thoughtful answers. And I really want to thank everyone in the chat. You guys have been amazing. I feel like I've learned so much about you personally, professionally, how you think about things. I know big time we're lucky to have both of you as our new CEOs in these very important parts of our health system. So I want to just say thank you for being our guests. Really, I really appreciate it. So let me wrap up the show. I'm going to give everyone time to like have a minute to breathe, check a couple emails before your 1 o'clock. So I hope that you will tune in next time because believe it or not, combined, Dr. Quinn, Lori Gustav, they have 71 years of combined Penn medicine experience and wisdom. And boy, do they have stories that they're ready to dish. So don't miss it. They'll be our guests next time on Growing Up Penn Medicine. We also have a great lineup for the next couple of weeks ahead, or next couple of shows ahead. So after Growing Up Penn Medicine, we have tips for mic dropping presentations with Mike Duncan, CEO of Chester County, and an external expert on doing great presentations, whether you're in the front of the room, whether you're virtual, Dana Band. June 20th, Creating High Performance Teams. Neil Ravitz, he was a West Point, captain of the West Point football team. And Andrea Wieland is our associate director of Penn Medicine, or the University of Penn Athletics. She is awesome. And we're going to talk about things that we know from building high performance athletes and high performance athletic teams. What do they have in common with building high performance teams in other settings? July 1, you've asked for it, you've got it. We're focusing on innovation. Roy Rosen from our Innovation Center is masterful at talking about innovation. So we'll look forward to some great shows that lie ahead. So please tell your friends, mark your calendars. I want to thank each of you for joining us today. And thank you all for every single thing that you're doing to continue to lead with intentionality. We are stronger together. Together, we're making a big difference. So I really want you to take good care over the next 2 weeks. Thanks for tuning in. We've got lots of reminders happening in the chat. So I look forward to seeing you at our next Lunch with Leaders. Thanks, everyone. Bye.